You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Welcome to episode 27 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. We broadcast on Middle Earth Network Radio as well as the Star Wars Report website. Our episodes are also available on our Facebook page at SW Beyond Films. But enough about how you got here, let's get this show started. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Herleman. And with me, like an herbalist you just can't shake, the EU guru himself, Nathan P. Butler!
Hey everybody, I'm apparently Darth Bane's skin condition this time around, so if you know of any good Sith dermatologists out there, I suppose that's where we should send him.
Hey, you know, real quick, before we join into our discussion of today's show, I gotta say, in the mail today, I got my Karen Travis The Clone Wars paperback edition from the UK. I was so stoked about that. It's just a little tiny bit bigger around the edges, but otherwise, it fits on my bookshelf so nice. I'm loving
very,
it.
Very, very nice. I tell you, you want to talk about things that are good to have now. I didn't know it was going to be out. I knew it was coming. I didn't realize what was going to be in it. But I wound up ordering Ryder Windham's The Ultimate Visual Guide, updated and expanded. And that is the first time we've ever been given basically an order of the chronological layout of the episodes of The Clone Wars. I mean, we know that after the big time jump where the costumes change and everything, where all of a sudden the midriff becomes a boob window and that's somehow better. That whole thing from there is pretty much chronological, but there'd always been a lot of question about the stuff for season 1, 2, and a big chunk of 3. And for the first time, they've actually laid it out there. It's pretty easy to understand. There's one error to it with the Mandalorian episodes, but I got a chance to talk with Leland Chi about it a little bit, with Ryder Windham a little bit about it, and figure out actually what the order of the episodes are supposed to be at this point, finally. So that book kind of takes you through it. But if you check out any of the forums that I frequent, I've actually posted the list. I think I probably posted it on Facebook, too. But it's awesome that finally we actually have an order for the episodes of The Clone Wars. I didn't think we'd have that for another couple years.
Well, and they also stuck Gendy in there. I managed to win a copy of this from DK Publishing on Twitter. And, I had the first one, and I didn't realize that this was the second one to it. I mean, I'm sitting there, I kept thinking about it, but it was in one of my bookshelves in the back of the closet, and I didn't want to really dig it out. And then I got it, and I'm like, oh, well, I got to put it in that one bookshelf, because my bookshelves are all set up for paperback, except for a few of these ones that are way in the back of the closet, because that's just the only place I can stick them. And I'm all sticking it back there, and I'm like, ah, sure enough, now I got two. You know, the first one and the expanded one. But it didn't dawn on me until you had said it that they had laid it out, actually, like, oh, yeah, here's your episodes. Yep. I was just, like, thinking, like, oh, yeah, this is cool, you know? But, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you are just synced in when it comes to those minute details of timeline and stuff, man. You were on that, like, I mean, I had to pull it right back out, and I'm like, holy crud, he's right. Oh, I just even got Gendy stuff in here. Yes, awesome.
And you know, the first thing I did was I got on Facebook, and I messaged Ryder going, okay, I got some questions. Can you clarify some stuff for me real quick? And it's like, number one, number two, number three. And he's a great guy as far as, you know, I mean, he was the guy who helped me find the newspaper strips collection thing that I was looking for, always kind of keeping an eye out for me whenever he happened to run across it on eBay. But he was very gracious, answered the questions. There's the one continuity trip up where it's got the season 3 Mandalorian episodes before the season 2 ones, which was what Ryder was given, but Leland said, no, that was an error. That was supposed to be the other way around and such, which makes sense. So hopefully sometime in the future, you know, we can go into what it is that the Clone Wars has given us and everything. That would make for a great episode, and we can go into the listing then. Or maybe if we have time in our feedback episode, I can take a second and run down it for us. But of course, that's not what we're here to talk about this time. What are we here to talk about?
That's right, Whistler. Here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions. Questions that have bothered you a long time, or simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, we explore some of the myths of Star Wars. Consider this your spoiler warning, because here we go.
That's right, we basically collected some of the most common Star Wars myths out there, not necessarily myths as in mythology, as in some of the different, I'm going to say religions, but theological beliefs in the Star Wars universe. Not that kind of myth, but kind of like the Mythbusters kind of myths, the things that people tend to believe or tend to have heard, and we want to try to cut through some of the bull that's out there for us.
Now, our first myth. George Lucas had the saga already written when he began work on the original film. Corollary. The proof can be found in part in that George Lucas released a novel of the first movie before it was even in theaters.
And this one is a myth. An absolute myth. The truth is, Lucas really only had broad ideas for the saga around the time that he was preparing A New Hope. You can see this in various released drafts of The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, where he wasn't quite sure where he was going with it. You can also see that annotated screenplays book, which does a good job of talking about the different drafts and how they took shape. For the prequels, we actually see him sit down at the start of that Phantom Menace DVD special. I think it's called In the Beginning, where he sits down and he has that great quote, "All I need is an idea." Now, we see him sit down to take rough ideas and turn them into scripts. So obviously he didn't have those ready to go. And we also know he didn't intend for Luke and Leia to be siblings at the beginning, all kinds of little nuances like that. He also hadn't decided on the time frame or ages of characters in their final form early on either. For years, the Expanded Universe worked off of information that Lucas had provided through Lucasfilm to the writers that made Obi-Wan 60 in Episode 4, Darth Vader 55 in Episode 4, and C-3PO 112 in Episode 4. And of course, the release of Episode 1 changed all that. You know, we got Obi-Wan is now 57 in A New Hope, Vader is 41 instead of 55. That's a pretty big gap. Episode 4... C-3PO, of course, his age kind of depends. The parts, they've now retconned to say, were 112, but he really was made by Anakin Skywalker, which seems to be an idea that Lucas just kind of pulled out of the air. Then, of course, there's the whole issue of Leia claiming to have memories of her mother from when she was a child. Must have been some fast frickin' memories, right? You know, she says it in Return of the Jedi, but it seems virtually impossible because of Revenge of the Sith. The real nail in the coffin, though, on that corollary, the thing about the novel, is that George Lucas didn't write it. Okay? Yes, there was a novelization of A New Hope that was released in late 1976. It was in paperback at first. The hardback version was just a thing released for the Sci-Fi Book Club. But it wasn't by George Lucas. It says it is, but it was ghostwritten by Alan Dean Foster. That's the same guy that wrote Splinter of the Mind's Eye and The Approaching Storm, and who, when I had a chance to interview him, I asked, "What's a duck?" That great question out of the novelization, he looked at me like I was freaking crazy. I had no idea what I was talking about.
The Bantha dropped its pants!
Pretty much.
All right, our second myth. As Timothy Zahn has said to fans in the past, it's always the intention for Luke to marry Mara Jade, all the way back to the Thrawn trilogy. I don't know about that one.
No! Lord, no! And I hate to contradict what Zahn has said a few times at various fan conventions and in various interviews, but no, that's not the case. Callista should be a good example for that, but some would say, they made Callista, so it was like a red herring for us. He wasn't really supposed to end up with her. Okay. According to both Kevin J. Anderson and Barbara Hamley, I've had a chance to interview both, actually, this is false. At the time that Anderson was writing the Jedi Academy trilogy, the last writing was being done on the final Thrawn trilogy book, The Last Command. It wasn't done yet. And Anderson actually thought that Zahn was going to try to end up putting Luke and Mara together, but Zahn assured him that the intent was for Luke and Mara to just be friends, which is why Anderson then had Mara and Lando as an item in Dark Apprentice, which Zahn later sort of retconned in the Hand of Thrawn books to them working together. Barbara Hamley was then later hired in to write Children of the Jedi. And she was given the specific task, not a suggestion, but do this, a specific task to create the great love of Luke's life, hence her introduction of Callista. By the time Anderson started writing on Darksaber, which is right after Children of the Jedi, Lucasfilm had apparently changed their minds because of how positive fan reaction was to Mara Jade in the Thrawn trilogy. Then they tasked Anderson this time with getting Callista out of Luke's life, because now they wanted Mara and Luke to get together later. Around that same time, Anderson and his wife began writing the Young Jedi Knights books, and they knew, based on Lucasfilm's new decision about needing to get rid of Callista to make room for Mara, that Luke and Mara would be together, but they couldn't reveal that in the Young Jedi Knight stuff. So, yes, Luke and Mara were meant to be together as of around maybe 1994, 1995, after Hamley was tasked with creating Callista as a love of Luke's life, but before Anderson was tasked with getting her out of the way, in a book that was slated to be released just about half a year later. However, the very existence of this change and Hamley's original task in creating Callista in the first place make it clear that all this Mara was always supposed to end up with Luke stuff is just plain bull, no matter how many times certain sites and certain individuals try to repeat it.
You know, I never really thought that they were deaths. I mean, I was one of those that kind of wanted it. But it's funny, though, that Callista failed so horribly. I mean, when you think about it, they could have played her up a little more. I mean, I recall the character, you know, was it Ming, her body?
Cray Mingla? Yeah.
Yeah, Mingla. When she took over the body at the end of the book, their bodies, like, changed, right? The body morphed and took on some of Callista's old forms.
Sort of, like the eyes and such, the eye color.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could have totally played that up more and been like, the Force was at work here, and, you know, Luke has a Force entity type girlfriend, but they never did, and then, you know, you had the train wreck that was the books that came after that. And,
you gotta figure, you know, they missed out on the opportunity to go into some more dysfunction. I mean, we got Luke kissing his sister, now we have Luke hooking up basically with the body of one of his students, you know? That'll send you to jail in America, by the way. And then you've got the whole thing of they could have had one of those scenes like out of the movie Ghost where like Luke is sitting there making a pot or something. There's like this ghostly entity helping him make the pot or some crazy stuff. It's been a long time since I've seen a Patrick Swayze movie other than Point Break. But suffice to say, no, she was not intended to be with Luke. That is Mara all along. Callista really was supposed to be the love of his life, but they changed their minds so quickly it's almost like, you know, she never really got a chance to become what she was intended to be in the first place.
Well, you know, you have to just kind of sit back and wonder if Callista just was meant for better things. When Fate of the Jedi came out and her character kind of resurfaced, I'm with you in the regards of they really could have played up the backstory in that series of what was going on there, especially with Luke. And they did have some moments where, you know, you were just kind of like, okay, you could tell that he definitely had love feelings and you know, there was no denying that. But, yeah, I could see how some people, you know, not knowing the facts, could see the line blurred and believe myth is truth.
Yep. I'd love to see what Barbara Hambly thinks now that, you know, they've killed off Callista in the way that they got rid of her. Just to say, what did you do to my character? But that's a whole nother story.
It was a face-off. All right, our next myth. Speaking of Callista, Callista's last name when she was in her original body was Masana.
The answer to this would be, I guess, sorta. We mentioned this a little bit in the last episode. That was a change that was made by Karen Travis for the Order 66 novel. And I had asked Leland Chi about this at one point. And the general idea of allowing her to have that new last name, Masana, because she's Masana in the Order 66 book and in No Prisoners, I guess it was also. And then she doesn't refer to a last name initially when she shows up in the New Republic era. And then when she shows up in Cray Mingla's body later, she's named Callista Ming. And the thought was always that that was just her old last name. But the general idea apparently was that instead of keeping Ming like it showed up in Murder and Slush Time, they thought it made sense that she might have had a different last name before she entered Cray's body because Ming is so close to Ming-La, which was Cray's last name, the body she's now in, that, or I guess that she was in until she croaked, that maybe Ming-La and Ming, the latter, was just an homage to the former, and we really had never heard what her real last name was. So now let's give her a new last name. And it turned out to be another M, which is Masana at this point.
Yeah, you gotta love Callista. Or hate her, because that's what we do, love or hate. Our next myth, R.A. Salvatore killed Chewbacca. In other words, it was his idea, and he deserves the blame, though not the death threats he later received.
Myth. He deserved the death threats. No? No? No, actually, this is another one. This is another one. Not only does he not deserve the death threats, it wasn't his fault. The death threats are just plain stupid. Truth is, though, that it wasn't even his idea. Just like with Barbara Hambly being given a specific task to create the love of Luke's life, Salvatore was given the specific task of killing Chewbacca. The decision had already been made in early story meetings about the alien invasion storyline that became the New Jedi Order books. In fact, the decision was made so far back, it was made when the project wasn't even a novel series. It's supposed to be a Dark Horse Comics epic comic series, not Del Rey books. The person who originally suggested that it be Chewbacca to be killed was actually Dark Horse Star Wars line editor Randy Stradley, also known under the pseudonym Mick Harrison, writing Dark Times.
Didn't mean to put you under the gun there, Randy, but, you know, I wouldn't check your inbox anytime soon.
People better be over it by now. If you're not over the death of Chewbacca by now, then you're starting to sound like what Nancy, I guess, was complaining about Tahiri not being over Anakin Solo. How long can he carry a torch?
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things, like, even to this day, when I talk to a casual, you know, person, Joe Schmo on the street about Star Wars, and then I get into the EU, one of the first things I like to drop on them, you know Chewbacca's dead, right? And you can tell if somebody knows anything about the books at all just by that alone, because sometimes you'll get some wild reactions. What? What do you mean?
Yeah.
They dropped a moon. Chewie went splat.
Yeah, I'm sure if you said, you know Jar Jar's dead, they would not have reacted the same way.
Fist pumping by some. All right, our next myth. Baling, who played Senator Bana Brimu in Revenge of the Sith, had all her scenes cut from the film because she had appeared in Playboy magazine.
That's skank. No. The truth about this one, apparently, supposedly, the public truth about this one. First of all, the issue in which Baling appeared was released around the same time as the film. So it couldn't have been because she had appeared, but it could have been because she was going to appear, which they might have known during final editing. Maybe the photo shoot had already happened or something. But Lucas has stated that the specific scenes that were cut that happened to feature Baling's character were actually cut at least a year prior to her photo shoot for that men's magazine. He also refers to this on the DVD's deleted scenes featurette, which does include her scenes, where he states that the scenes were cut only for time considerations. So it would appear that this is just a coincidence. Though, if it wasn't a coincidence, do you think they'd tell us? So I'm going to go with this is a myth, but I wonder if there's at least a little bit of bad blood to a degree because of that decision that she made, if maybe there was something where Lucas kind of felt like he dodged a bullet here, perhaps. Maybe he didn't intend to cut it for that reason, but when it happened to coincide, be like, hey, didn't have to say anything anyway.
Well, you know, that's one of the things about Episode 3 that really was kind of upsetting. I love the book. Probably one of the best EU adaptations out there. But Padme's character kind of gets slaughtered if you think about how the book was compared to the movie.
No, wait. She doesn't get slaughtered. She just loses the will to live. Oh, never mind.
That too. You're right. But you know, we had all the rebellion aspect, the angle there, which built up a whole little Anakin kind of jealousy with Obi-Wan, thinking, oh, is he cheating on, wait, what's going on here? Why is Obi-Wan on my couch? What? Wait, what? Obi-Wan stains, huh? And it really bothered me that all the Senate stuff, all the building up the rebellion, all that background stuff that was essential to Padme's character got cut completely out, and it was all, it was time constraints. George, it's Star Wars. You can make it 5 hours long. We don't care. We'll sit through it.
I gotta wonder, though, if it was partially because of the dress that Padme was wearing that made her look like Grimace from McDonald's.
Robble, robble.
Precisely.
Our next myth. Battlefront 3 has not come about because of LucasArts. Or Free Radical. Or some specific company. Somewhere in a galaxy not so far away. Closer to your home.
This one, it's hard to say. The truth really kind of sort of depends on point of view. Battlefront 3 was being developed around what appeared to be the same general storyline that we actually did get to see in Battlefront Elite Squadron for the Nintendo DS and PlayStation Portable. Lucasfilm was having the game developed by a company called Free Radical. Now, some have called this a bad move and called Free Radical incompetent because they were unable to finish the game, but it's more complicated than that. Free Radical was a company formed by people who had worked on classics like GoldenEye 007 and The Perfect Dark from the Nintendo 64.
Yes, great games. Sorry.
Absolutely. Favorites of mine. So they leave Rare to form their own company. That new company is Free Radical. And then they create a series called Time Splitters, a series that went fairly well.
Yeah.
You know, in retrospect, I mean, not as well as, say, Perfect Dark or GoldenEye, but
yeah, it was a fun shooter. I have both those. Those two were good. Not as fun as GoldenEye, but they were good.
Right. So these are competent people. And they've said in recent months, that is the old Free Radical folks, that LucasArts was hell to work with, basically refusing or delaying payment at certain parts of production, different benchmarks and such as per the contract that they had, and basically just otherwise kind of dragging their feet as if they were intending for Free Radical to fail. That's probably an exaggeration on Free Radical's part, but it sounds a lot like the same issues that Karen Travis had with Del Rey about non-payment that caused her to drop Imperial Commando 2 and those other books. When Free Radical went into bankruptcy, the game went to Rebellion. That's the company that made the PSP versions of Elite Squadron and Renegade Squadron. Elite Squadron was a version, I guess, because there's a DS version. Renegade Squadron was actually a PSP exclusive.
Great title.
Yeah, Rebellion's been around for about two decades, and it's still around. The company is still here. Their most recent release is, I think, Sniper Elite V2, and before that they'd released the rather critically bashed Never Dead. So they're around, they're just not necessarily making great stuff. They apparently also dropped the ball on Battlefront 3 and no longer have it in development through them either. Interestingly, the Free Radical guys that are so often blamed for the demise of Battlefront 3 were later bought out by Crytek. It's a company behind the critically acclaimed and graphics-pushing Crysis games. The Free Radical acquisition became Crytek UK, and that was a team behind the online multiplayer component of Crysis 2. So they're apparently working right now on a sequel to the shooter genre game Homefront, and they're also still around, albeit in a new form. So who knows what Crytek could have made out of a Battlefront game. So it seems like it was kind of a mess all the way around. If anybody's to blame, it seems like it's everybody, not just one company. So a myth if you're saying it's blamed on one company. But yeah, the companies behind it definitely have dropped the ball over and over again on that game.
Can we say that LucasArts dropped the ball by not making it happen? I don't know.
Possibly. I mean, you know, if they're the ones that are the driving force behind it, perhaps.
Yeah, I guess that's a perception. You got to watch out for perceptions out there. They can run away and it becomes a label, and then all of a sudden you got hurt feelings and people are upset.
You killed Chewbacca. You must die.
Yes. You must die. I only write his death scene the best. You know, I don't know. I was going back to Chewbacca for a second. That was a great, I don't know, great character moment for Han Solo. Granted, the next five or six books, we saw him just kind of dredge the bottom of the gutters for, you know, character development as well, but I think his character fundamentally moved forward after that. It was a profound time for Star Wars fans. I mean, when you got to that, and all of a sudden Chewie dies, it's like, oh, dude, Luke's... I mean, everybody was on the table. I mean, I can't even think how long it took before they actually said, no, the big three are still okay. And that's when they became the big three, you know?
No one is safe. You hear that, Lando?
Myth. Timothy Zahn screwed up the dates for the Clone Wars in his novel Dark Force Rising. Darn it, Zahn, darn it!
You know, I'm going to have to say this one is a myth. Because, I mean, yeah, are the dates incorrect? Yeah, the dates are incorrect. But is it his fault? Absolutely not. Okay, this is just like the whole thing with the ages of the characters that Lucas changed. Zahn was working with the date information that was provided by Lucasfilm based on what Lucas was saying at the time about the timing of the Clone Wars back around, say, the late 1980s or so. He didn't change his mind about the timing of the Clone Wars, it would seem, until the mid to late 1990s. So you can't blame Zahn for getting dates, quote, wrong when they were correct dates as of the time he wrote the book. Just another instance of Lucas changing his mind and retroactively making somebody else's writing factually incorrect all of a sudden.
Ah, oh, retcons.
It's all right, because he always meant for those rocks to be in front of R2-D2 and then disappear when that camera angle changed. He always meant for the gate at Jabba's palace to be huge in one camera angle and still small when you look at it from the inside. Don't you understand the mind of a genius?
That's right. You know, and retcons, normally I love a retcon, but in this case, this is what I call a forced on you retcon. And some EU fans could use this as their ammunition at fans that say the EU is wrong, it's not following George's vision. It's like, well, it was following George's vision until he changed his mind!
Exactly, exactly. It's the whole playing in the sandbox thing. You know, he says, here's a sandbox part just for you. Build yourself a lovely castle. And then later on, he gets tired of playing in his area of the sandbox, and he says, move over, and stomps your castle, and then, you know, make something else on top of it. That's kind of the facetious way of looking at it, but that's the realities of working in, you know, a licensed property. At any point, you know, Lucasfilm can go and change whatever they want. Lucas himself, Lucasfilm, could change anything. The books have to adapt. Same thing whether we're talking Trek books, the Wars books that I've worked on, if Decipher were to change their minds. Any licensed property, they can change it. Heck, we should just be happy that we don't have a lot of retcons happening between Lucas and Lucas. Yeah, Leia, she remembers her mom when she was young. Uh-huh, I believe you.
And, you know, speaking of retcons, myth. Karen Travis stopped writing Star Wars because of the Clone Wars TV series changes to The Mandalorians. Or, she was made to stop writing for Star Wars because she took The Mandalorians in a direction Lucas disagreed with. The Klingons!
We dealt with this back in episode 26 pretty extensively, I think, but the short version is she decided to stop writing for the Commando series with Imperial Commando Book 2 due to the continuity changes to the Mandalorians and the planet Mandalore in the Clone Wars, but then she left Star Wars entirely, dropping the military guide, the Boba Fett novel, Imperial Commando 2, and so on, due to non-payment issues with Del Rey. Lucas wasn't a direct part of the issue at all. It was just a contractually based business decision. And it was two parts, not just one big event. It's, you know, what was it they always say with the mob? It's nothing personal. It's just business.
It's not always good business, you know, Louis. And you gotta, you can't blame people though for thinking that one correlates to the other. I mean, technically, all that she quit at the time was writing the Imperial Commando books. But you gotta think, you know, well, like, that sting has gotta been there, you know. Plus, you're one of the only few Star Wars movie adaptations that doesn't get a paperback in the United States. I mean,
you were just gonna keep it. You've got it, for the love of God, you've got it.
I know, I got it. I'm just so excited. I can finally. I should just shut up about it, but I just can't.
There's
it's one of those things you ponder, though.
There's a fallacy in debate that actually I first learned from one of the first season episodes of The West Wing, but then I wound up teaching it when I taught debate. It's post hoc ergo propter hoc. Basically means after it, therefore because of it. It's the logical fallacy of saying that because something happened second, the first thing must have been the cause of it. You know, I wonder if there's a way of having something that would rearrange the Latin for that to make a Star Wars version that basically says that fans have the fallacy of, because I saw this and liked it first, whatever Lucas does that contradicts it, Lucas must be wrong. It's a fallacy. It's a crappy argument. But it seems to be the logical fallacy we tend to see a lot of times in fandom, whether it's this franchise or any other. Needs a name.
Personal canon.
Oh, canon. Not again.
Yes. Myth. George Lucas ordered that Anakin Solo be killed off because of name confusion with Anakin Skywalker, since the new Jedi Order novel series was being released around the same time as the prequel films.
You mean people can have the same name? Klaus! That's impossible. This is actually somewhat true, believe it or not, but there's more to it than just the name itself. In the New Jedi Order, the creators had intended for Anakin to become a major Jedi leader, growing in power, growing in abilities, until he could be seen as sort of the heir to Luke's leadership position. And then Jason Solo, the older brother, was supposed to die midway through the book series. Well, since Anakin Skywalker in the prequel era is also sort of a prodigy that was growing in power as a Jedi Knight to the point where he sees himself as the most powerful Jedi who should be part of the leadership, Lucas kind of felt that Anakin Solo's storyline was too close to that of Anakin Skywalker. So to avoid confusion, he rejected Anakin Solo being that figure in the New Jedi Order, so Del Rey reversed the roles of Anakin and Jason, leaving Jason to grow in power and heroism in the New Jedi Order, and then turn twisted and evil, while Anakin was just killed off so that Tahiri could pine for him for decades.
Well, and turn twisted and evil came later. You know, keep that in mind if you've never read the New Jedi Order as you're going down the road of the EU. You know, he was a hero once. He was a rogue Jedi that I loved. And a lot of other people did, too. And I'm not the only one crying. Wait, maybe I am.
I'll tell you, I would say that probably in Star Wars, I actually like the story arc of the fall of Ulit Keldroma in the Tales of the Jedi stuff and Jason Solo. Throughout from his changes in New Jedi Order all the way up to the end of Legacy of the Force, I think I actually like those a heck of a lot better than the fall of Anakin Skywalker. Probably because the fall of Anakin, sometimes it's kind of heavy-handed, and other times it felt like it was zipped through. You know, the whole, if I hadn't read the Stover novelization of Revenge of the Sith, I wouldn't have got as much out of it kind of effect going on there. Yeah, those are some great ones to check out. You want to see some good falls from grace. If you've never read Tales of the Jedi, if you've never read New Jedi Order, up through Legacy of the Force, hopefully skip Dark Nest, then I think you'd really get a kick out of those for the fall of a hero.
Yeah, you know, Ganner Rysode is another one that when they turned Jason, it kind of, you know, retroactively made me feel taint for Ganner's sacrifice. It was such a great scene. And the character, when you think about how he grew throughout the series, he's one of the few, him, Worth Skitter, mainly those two, though, are the examples that I like of new characters being introduced and being used, although they both got killed off early. not so early for Ganner, but Worth kind of bites it early. But I like characters that get introduced. They write out some books. You know, we see some character growth with them. But Ganner especially started out arrogant, cocky. He ends up getting a big scar on his face. He chooses not to get it healed so he'd have a constant reminder. And by the time a traitor, the point that that character is at, and by the time it gets to the end of the book and he realizes where he's supposed to be in fate, and everything just clicks, and then you have one of the best montages ever, None Shall Pass. That scene is just awesome. Come one at a time, or by the thousand, I don't give a damn. None shall pass. I love it. Absolutely one of my favorite scenes. But you're right, though. There's some scenes where it's just they're more powerful than others, and Jason's character is one that I still say, if you're going to read those books, you got to go back to when he was a kid. Follow it all the way through. You're going to get the most out of that character if you do.
And I got to say, you know, just from the standpoint of how much of a Star Wars geek I am, I recall when watching Fellowship of the Ring for the first time, when Gandalf pulls his "You shall not pass" and slams the staff down, I thought, he's pulling a Ganner. Wait a second.
Yeah.
Wait a second. No, that's probably the opposite direction.
You're like, I just retconned Tolkien.
Hey, if they can use April Fools to try to work in the Willow stuff, why not?
Myth. Time travel was introduced into Star Wars with Crosscurrent in 2010.
Oh, if only that were true. And I'm thinking of things like Hegg's Tale, which was ridiculously bad in telling a time travel story back in the Tales from Mos Eisley one-shot comic that you don't tend to see very much anywhere because it sucked. No, time travel in the saga has actually been around for quite a while, just usually in somewhat obscure sources, like 2008's Dawn of Defiance RPG adventure called Echoes of the Jedi. There was also a story about a man experiencing time dilation in Holonet News, a similar experience in 1999's The Last Hand in the Adventure Journal. Star Wars Tales had a story called The Secret of Tet Ami, where it's Mace Windu doing the time travel. There's that horrid, absolutely horrible Ewoks and Droids crossover story from the Marvel Star Comics run that was recently reprinted in the Omnibus called Lost in Time, where, yeah, the droids travel in time and wind up meeting the Ewoks before Return of the Jedi and yet still somehow don't recognize them in Return of the Jedi. There's also a rather bizarre story called Tlatni Throws a Shape, my legendary comic writer Alan Moore, that was in the pages of Marvel's UK Star Wars series. It was later reprinted in the US under Classic Star Wars Devil Worlds, and hopefully will be in an omnibus sometime soon where they finally collect the freaking UK stuff. So time travel in the saga does go back at least as far as the publishing of Moore's story, Tlatni Throws a Shape, back in the UK in 1982. Before even Return of the Jedi. And those are just a few examples.
Wow. Now, that Secret of Tet Ami, the one with Mace Windu, have you read that one?
I have, though, honestly, it's been a long time since I've read it. If I remember right, it's something along the lines of essentially one of those things where a person winds up back in time creating the circumstances of the world that he found when he first got there before going back in time. It's a little vague at this point for me.
I find it curious. I mean, it's just one of those things with the time travel. I'm wondering if most of these stories are all with them going forward, or some of them going with them going into the past. I mean,
most of them are actually backwards, really? or at some level of, you know, you travel back and you wind up at your normal spot. The time dilation ones are always forward, but the other, which is basically what Crosscurrent did. But the other ones have tended to go more past than future, but it's always to places that really have very little meaning to anybody other than that character. It's not like we got characters going forward and they're seeing the future of what happens between Fate of the Jedi and, you know, Legacy or anything like that. It's all pretty straightforward, little, quick, personal stories, and that's it.
And it's not to be confused with flow walking, right? I
mean, right,
we could,
right.
We could blur the lines. Well, it was technically a flow.
I always think of flow walking as kind of like being Al in Quantum Leap. You know,
yes.
You're like, your job is to check things out, but that's it. You know,
that's how. Yes, exactly. I was thinking the same thing. That's funny as heck. Oh man, that's
you see Jason popping out in the garish, you know, jacket and the cigar. He's like, well, Sam, you got yourself into a mess this time around.
I think the worst thing they ever did with flow walking was when they had Tahiri kiss Anakin and things changed for a moment and yet never changed. It was like, that was so confusing. It was like, what is the point of this?
Very true. Very, that was definitely one of the weirdest moments we saw with flow walking. Flow walking, to be able to see an event, I always kind of liked. Because I like the idea of, and it's something I actually use in Greater Good. Oh, I said it again. My goodness, I'm starting to plug again like I haven't in many episodes. Wait for people to start whining again. Part of why I did time travel the way that I did in Greater Good, because I'm fascinated with the idea of, like, supernatural stuff, like, you know, psychic stuff or whatever, you know, out-of-body experiences and that sort of thing. You know, what if, you know, deja vu or something like that is actually a repeat of a loop in time, not something that's a misfiring of synapses like we tend to think? Or what if it's, you know, when people have hypnotic suggestion and it's like they're reliving an event in a therapy session and they're seeing it or feeling it, then what if, you know, those two together, you take that to the next degree and you've got something like flow walking. Maybe the human mind can sort of see again and live through again events it's gone through before just by bringing those memories and those sensations back to the processing parts of our brain. I love that idea. Flow walking could be such an awesome tool to learn more about the truths of the past in Star Wars, and yet it seems like it's almost like it's something, because they made it so that it could theoretically change things at least a little, they've made it, you know, it's like the ultimate super powerful thing. You could change history, so they don't want to touch it anymore. But it'd be so awesome to see that back again in some way, to, you know, even a murder mystery type thing, you know?
Well, imagine, like, say, Scourge. In Scourge, how you've got a Jedi librarian. Imagine if he was obsessed with flow walking and going back and chronicling things.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be, I mean, you wouldn't have to have scenes years later where it's like, what is that R2-D2? You've got memories of Padme stored in there that you've been hanging on to for years, and this little glitch is causing them to come out? Well, show us already!
Well, you know, you mentioned the deja vu sensation. I could see how, you know, when Luke fought Luke Skywalker, the clone, how his force connection was kind of muffled. He had a buzzing feeling going on. How in that same kind of similarity, you know, a duplicate presence, how the version of you that's present right at this moment would feel when the future you came as the deja vu moment, but you didn't know it because you hadn't felt it, but there was an, you know, exact brainwave resonation that at that moment it crossed over and felt like deja vu. I could see that.
Yeah, I just love the time travel stuff. Anytime you've got the reliving something from a different perspective. I just finished reading, and we're kind of getting off topic. I guess this should be my last aside on this. I'm rereading all the Ultimate Marvel stuff right now. I read up to Ultimatum years ago, and now I'm going back and rereading it all from scratch. And I had just read the Ultimate Fantastic Four story called President Thor. And it starts out, basically, you reach a point where there's like five different versions of the characters from different points in their lives or different points in the story, all present at the moment that the Fantastic Four get their powers. And it leaves some question as to whether or not they got their powers from the accident they thought it was. Was it the accident that was actually caused on purpose by someone else? What about this other person? Really kind of a cool, you know, roundabout way. First story I ever saw that really did that in comic form was an old story called Wildstar Sky Zero that was pretty good from Image Comics back in the day. But I love, time travel's always been a fascination.
Anyway, Wildstar. I have the first five series.
That's what I got. It's just that. I didn't follow it afterwards, but that one was with the weird starfish thing on it.
Yes, and he came out. Yeah, it was like Venom almost. It was like, it's a starfish Venom. Yeah, this is awesome.
Creepy.
All right, Ziggy, yeah, we'll get back.
Speaking of time travel, kind of, our last myth is kind of a time travel-ish type of thing.
Myth. The humans in Star Wars are actually the ancient ancestors of humans on Earth. Lucas said so.
Not so much. This is not the case. However, at one time, the opposite was meant to be the case. In other words, that the Star Wars humans weren't the ancestors to Earth, but that Earth was the our society is the ancestor of the humans in Star Wars, even though they're a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
But it's not?
No. Basically, when Lucasfilm was, gosh, I forget, what was it? It's like late 1990s. They were working with Ace Books. And the idea was they were going to work with Ace Books on a book series called Alien Exodus. And humans from 25th century Earth, our future, would have wound up traveling through a wormhole and become the first humans in another part of the galaxy or another part of the universe, only for us to later realize, holy crap, this is the Star Wars galaxy. They are the first humans there. But the story was dropped. They nixed it. And what elements did exist from that story, which was actually supposed to have been written by a guy named Robert J. Sawyer, got tweaked and shifted several times, really, to become an independent, non-Star Wars novel series called Alien Chronicles instead of Alien Exodus by a writer named Deborah Chester. So there actually was a time when they were purposely trying to do that, not some kind of Infinity's goofy story like Into the Unknown where... Was it the Millennium Falcon winds up going into the future and crashing on Earth, and Indiana Jones finds the Millennium Falcon and
man,
Chewbacca is Bigfoot and all that?
Yes, I was just gonna say that, dude. Yes, that's awesome. That is one of my favorite Infinities too. And then when Indy shows up later, you're just like, oh look, it's Chewbacca, the Bigfoot.
Yeah, I mean, heck, I used on the Star Wars Timeline Gold about probably 10 pages, 20 pages, whatever into it. I've actually got a breakdown of okay, if this was true. Based on what we know of the dates of the Indiana Jones movies, when does A New Hope take place in our years? I mean, I totally geeked out on that story.
Yes!
But that's the closest it looks like we're ever going to get to it. It seems like Lucas, he was okay with the idea at the time of having there be a connection between humans on Earth and humans in the Star Wars galaxy, but it seems like that's all been tossed. No matter which direction you were trying to take it, it seems like that's been tossed out the window right around the time that Alien Exodus became Alien Chronicles and became non-Star Wars. Unfortunately, because I think it'd be kind of neat to see a tie together. But you never know. You know, maybe all of us, maybe it's like, was it Saint Elsewhere? Where it's all really a dream inside someone else's head. Maybe our universe is actually all a dream inside Cade Skywalker's head when he's on Death Sticks.
Well, as long as Cade doesn't climb into a Yor Horror or Yor-Chor or whatever.
Those big old... The
yes.
Diamond things?
As long as he doesn't climb into a Thoyor pyramid shape ship and go back in time 25,000 billion years or whatever it is and drops himself off in the past and all of them are the ones that found everything, we have a Skywalker loop, I'll be happy because I don't want to see that.
That's what we'll find out. We will find out that that Cade Skywalker and Delia Blue finally did have a child, and that child's name was Zesh, the Force Hound from Dawn of the Jedi. And fanboys' heads will explode, including ours, I'm sure.
Yes, mine's already... I'm bleeding out the nose over here. Oh.
Although we will be talking Dawn of the Jedi in the near future here on the show, because our first story arc is finally over with. It's a really cool series.
That is true. One that I was actually very excited about. You know, I've mentioned before, it feels like a reboot. Of all the Star Wars books out there, comics out there... This is the one that is what you know and yet absolutely nothing you've ever seen before. And, oh, can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, I will say it hasn't really thrown me for a loop yet, although the end of the first arc didn't quite end where I thought it was going to. So, to a degree, there was a twist. You want twists in Star Wars and things you don't expect. Knight Errant Escape has begun with an issue with two rather surprising twists just back-to-back. I mean, one at the beginning of the first issue, one at the end of the first issue, and you're sitting there going, what? And it's great. Darth Vader in the Ghost Prison also has an interesting twist by the time we get to the end of the first issue. They're really... The comics are really starting to build up. Of course, it probably helps that Dark Times doesn't have its new story out yet. I always beat up on Dark Times.
Boba Fett is dead.
Yeah, Boba Fett is dead is going well with Connor Trinneer. Or not Trinneer. That's the actor
from Connor
Enterprise.
Freeman.
Connor Freeman. There you go. Not the guy from Enterprise being back and everything. Yeah.
You know, that one is one that I enjoy, but at the same time, I wasn't... I don't know. It didn't have that New Jedi Order, oh my gosh, anyone could die feel because of where they placed it. You know, what is it? Rebel Dream? Is that the kids series? I gotta look.
The kids series? Rebel Forces?
Yes. In the Rebel Forces series, one of the books ends with Luke, I believe, wrecking a pod race or something like that, and you almost think he dies. And then in the next page, like the last page or something like that, you find out, oh no, everything's okay. Luke's okay. And then the next book in the series comes out. And I remember to this day thinking, you know, I knew Luke was okay, but if they would have ended it like that with Leia thinking he had died, I think that book would have been a better story all the way around. And then you could start the next book with, yeah, Luke was fine.
You start to wonder if the Jedi who... Or the Sith who can meditate and see the future aren't so much seeing future events as they're looking forward and, you know, able to just see the comic books and books that we read.
Nice.
I hereby call upon the powers of the Del Rey, the Dark Horse.
The LucasArts.
I say I'd call upon the powers of the LucasArts, but they don't seem to be producing much lately.
Yes. Nice. Well, that about wraps up this episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films. Thank you once again for listening. And remember, you can listen to our show airing on Middle Earth Network Radio, as well as streaming on the Star Wars Report website, www.starwarsreport.com. Our episodes are also available right on our Facebook page at SW Beyond Films, or just type in Star Wars Beyond the Films in the search bar. But no matter how you get there, be sure you like our page. It's one of the best ways you can interact with us. Not only can you post comments to us while you're listening to the show, you just might even be heard on the show. Each month, we'll release a feedback episode when we have enough answers, messages, emails of that nature. You'll note that the last month we didn't have one. Well, we didn't get that many emails. We're going to record one of those in, what, another 24 hours when we record one, Nathan?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so we're going to have some. So you get that feedback to us. We'll record them. We'll send them off. You'll enjoy it. You'll hear your stuff. We had the Karen Travis one. There was a lot of information there that we got from the fans, how they felt about things. Not all of it made it into the show. So be sure to send us off those emails. If you have something to say, get it to us. You can email us at beyondthefilms@starwarsfanworks.com. So, once again, this has been... Yes, yes, Whistler. Whistler's been broadcasting this episode. He wants you to thank him, like we do. So, this has been Mark Herleman.
And Nathan Butler.
Thanks for listening, and may the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds. That means you, Whistler.
Banana?
I think it's Banana Bree.
Banana. Banana. Banana Ramalingong. Banana number day.
My God, I just had to get another drink and make sure Jody had gotten home and everything. So let me, when we're talking about Star Wars myths, we open up a can of whoop-ass.
Yes! That was good, wasn't it, Whistler? I know.
I can't tell you how many times that's happened. We've been doing Republic Forces where somebody will open up a can of anything and it becomes a can of that.
Nice.
Okay.
Too bad cookies didn't have a sound. Ooh, I got some Wookiee cookies. They're chewy. At fans that say the EU is wrong. It's not following George's vision. It's like, well, it was following George's vision until he changed his mind! You know, keep that in mind if you've never read the New Jedi Order as you're going down the road of the EU. You know, he was a hero once. He was a rogue Jedi that I loved. And a lot of other people did, too. And I'm not the only one crying. Wait, maybe I am.
Anyway. Sweet. Well, we got enough bloopers for that one. Good Lord.
And I slowly figured out what I said. Yeah,
like,
that sound.
It's kind of one of those.
Did I just say?
Yeah, exactly. Wait, what?
Never underestimate the dark side of the Force.
Exactly.
So we're gonna have one. You know, we'll touch on that as well. So again, be sure to hit us with that female.
Hit us with a female. Be sure to pick up that girl and just beat the living crap out of her. just beat it. Hello, little girl. Come here for just a moment. It starts to sound like
to Ahsoka. What
is his name?
Against the wall.
Is it Adam Sandler that does the severe beating of the high school like yes. Spanish teacher? Oh, like, oh, no, don't it's me.
All day long. Mop, mop, mop.
Singing my song. Exactly.